your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95 PFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Good afternoon, David Britton of the Stardome.
Good afternoon, Johnny from BFM.
Hi, how are you?
Is the big hungry there as well?
I sure am.
Oh, g'day.
I'm also from BFM, but...
Can you hear us okay, David?
Yeah, we just had a conversation, John.
Yes, I'm just checking, because he's just checking. Sometimes the volume can be a bit quiet on our end on his phone line.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, no, that's good, yep.
Okay, good. Hey, so what are we kicking things off with this afternoon, David? What's happening out there in space? Has an astronaut done something quite extraordinary?
Yeah, I nearly put the headline as being something to do with fingering, but I thought that might be misinterpreted.
It sounds crazy. You'd said basically he's plugged up, or someone's plugged up a hole with their finger.
They did. While the crew were asleep on the space station, flight controllers discovered a loss in cabin pressure, just a small loss. The crew was asleep at the time, so it was such a small loss they didn't do anything until the astronauts woke up. So they immediately went to try and find the source of the leak, and they found a hole 2 millimeters in diameter. It's actually in the Russian spacecraft that's attached to the space station.
It's a Russian fault. I see. Okay.
Well, initially they weren't sure, and they thought it might have been a micrometeoroid or space junk had hit the spacecraft and caused it.
Right.
Space junk. And so one of the astronauts put their finger over it to immediately close it. They weren't in great danger, but if they'd done nothing, they would have run out of air in 18 days.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, I mean, that air is just going to keep on going through that little hole. Nothing stops it.
Have they plugged it with some sort of space sealant?
Well, the first thing, they just put a piece of tape over it.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to keep his finger there. But then they did another one using epoxy and gauze and a bunch of stuff.
How do they find it? I know that, when I was plumbing, to find a gas leak, you cruise around with a squeegee bottle with some soapy water and it does some bubbles. But how does that work? They obviously have a meter that says, hey, there's a hole here somewhere, and then you just cruise around looking for it, or what?
I'm not sure. I would imagine to be something like something that floats in the air, because in the space station... because there's no gravity, all the air just sits there. Mm. So they have fans on all over the place to circulate the air. Otherwise, you're going to end up breathing in your own carbon dioxide.
A little pop-off could be a bit...
So the first thing they do is turn all the fans off.
Yes.
And then put something in the air that they could see, and then it would naturally drift towards the hole.
Does it get really cold if there's a hole in the spaceship and space is... sucking everything out?
Eventually it would, yes, but not at the rate that this was going. As I said, they would have been out of here in 18 days.
Yeah.
So
cool.
They're in no immediate danger.
What do they do for spare air? Because they obviously lost some air.
Well, there's a cargo craft due there, and what they're trying to decide is maybe they'll take some of the air from that cargo craft to make up the difference in the space station.
Okay.
But I don't think they've made a final decision on that.
So, just classic bung Russian stuff. Do you know, it's funny you say that it was kind of a Russian issue, because I've actually got an old Soviet-era Russian guitar, and it's built terribly. So I'm kind of concerned about what this space stuff's like.
Well, I don't want to go down that track, but what I can say, though, is more recently what they discovered is that some people thought maybe it was an astronaut who wanted to commit suicide or sabotage.
What? Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. But a bit like cabin fever, like, oh, fuck it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
It turns out that it most likely was done on the ground before it went up. Either in the testing or the certification, because every spacecraft, before they go up, go through a whole range, as you can imagine, of pressure tests and so on.
Sounds like quite a major, really, like quite a thing to...
Yeah, so they have promised to come out with a report in a couple of weeks. It's going to be from Roscommon, the Russian Space Agency, as to what happened, why, etc., and what they're doing to stop it happening again.
David, are they still firing the same old rockets that they've been firing into space since the 50s, the Russians? Is it still the same design?
Almost. 60s rather than 50s.
Okay,
yeah, the basic design, but there's obviously been a lot of improvements in other ways since then. But yes, it's basically the same sort of thing, the same sort of idea. Yes.
Did the Russians make better rockets than the Americans?
Don, just slow down, mate. Just slow down.
New Zealand makes pretty good rockets.
Okay.
Yeah, but we're not we don't have a cool name like cosmonaut or anything rad like
no,
that.
No, we don't not putting any people up.
Okay.
Yuri Gagarin.
Okay, now is it the Spitzer? Is it a telescope, Dave?
Yes, the Spitzer is a space telescope.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Because people have heard of the Hubble Space Telescope. It's been in the news a lot. What people haven't heard so much about is the Spitzer, which is celebrating 15 years of being up in orbit. Mm. But there's actually four. So the Hubble Space Telescope gets stuff in the visible wavelengths and also ultraviolet light. Mm-hmm. The Spitzer is optimized for infrared radiation. Okay. The other two, the Compton Gamma Ray Observatory, obviously observes in gamma rays, which is very high energy light. And the Chandra X-ray Observatory obviously observes in X-rays. So those four space telescopes that look at different parts of the spectrum. The Spitzer, though, 15 years and is still going strong. It's gone to a slightly different phase of the way it works because it ran out of liquid helium. Mm. But then it only had a 2.5 year supposed life. So
reprogram it? Is it a reprogramming the telescope while it's out in space when it goes past its quote natural life?
No, it's more that the instruments needed liquid helium to keep them very, very cool. And when that ran out, it was still well after the 2.5 years of the initial mission, they just changed to a different way of observing and different objects after that. So it still kept on going. Mm-hmm. So as I said, 15 years, it's still going, and it was originally a 2.5 year mission.
Yeah.
It's doing extremely well. So, it's helped discover extrasolar planets, including the seven rocky ones that have been in the news recently. And it's made one of the most detailed maps of the Milky Way, our galaxy.
Nice.
But all in infrared light. Infrared light's really useful because visible light gets blocked by dust. Infrared light goes through that, and so infrared light allows you to see through dust that otherwise blocks your view. Yeah, so Spitzer has made amazing photographs and images and done a lot of very good research. It's still going.
Okie doke.
And it's just flying. It's just flying out into space away from Earth constantly, further and further away.
Don't be scared, John. You sound scared. Don't
worry. Or is it orbiting Earth?
It's okay.
It's not going to hit the Earth, no.
No, is it orbiting Earth or is it like flying away from us?
It's away from us. Okay. It's in orbit around the sun like we are.
Just on that hitting the Earth, I watched Deep Impact the other day, everyone. Deep Impact. And gee whiz, that's quite a grim movie. Up until right the very end that we realized we're not all going to die. The whole movie is...
Spoiler.
Spoiling, like the worst movie ever.
I haven't seen it.
I actually watched a really good documentary that you might like, David. It's called The Most Unknown.
Okay.
It's really good. It's basically like a big old documentary that sends nine scientists into extraordinary parts of the world to uncover unexpected answers to some of humanity's biggest questions. And somebody goes to the big old telescope and stuff. It's really good, actually. I think you might like it.
Oh, well, at least it's not the old Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, no, it's not.
Vandenikan aliens.
I was unstoned when I looked this one up, so it's straight ahead,
Right. Now, David, has there been a faint comet in the morning sky?
Yeah, this is really for enthusiasts. Comets, when they come for the public, they really are big and bright, and people can see them pretty easily. This comet, you can't see naked eye. You've got to use at least binoculars. But it's green. It's an unusual comet.
Man. Kryptonite?
Sorry?
Is it kryptonite, perhaps?
not this time.
Damn it.
And there's no one carrying it either. but it's in the very early morning sky, so before sunrise in the nor-northeast. If people look up Capella and Betelgeuse, the two bright stars there, In between, but you do need at least binoculars to see it.
David, I'm going to have to back you up there. Did you say Betelgeuse just now?
Betelgeuse, yes.
Just one more time, what did you just say? Did you say there's something in outer space called Betelgeuse?
Not Betelgeuse, but Betelgeuse.
Betelgeuse, so it's kind of French? French name for Betelgeuse, perhaps?
No, okay. It's actually Arabic.
Oh, wow, awesome.
Yeah, a lot of the star names are Arabic.
Nice.
Yeah, like Aldebaran.
I'm a little bit gutted it's not Betelgeuse, but it's okay.
Yeah.
How fast is this comet going?
Oh, pretty fast. I mean, if you do see it, the next night it won't be in exactly the same spot.
Mm.
So it's moving that quickly, like faster than the planets.
Is it shooting, is it stuck in our, galaxy or universe or whatever?
It's orbiting the sun.
Yes.
But comets usually have a very elliptical orbit, so they get close to the sun, then much further away.
Yes.
It's not a circular orbit. So it's only when they get closer to the sun than Mars that the ices on the surface start evaporating and releasing the dust that was in there, and the dust is what makes the tail.
Mm-hmm.
And so that tail always points away from the sun. So anyway, if people are up in the early morning, that's something to see. I mean, after sunset, there's still four planets to see.
Right.
Venus, Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars. And over the coming couple of weeks, Venus is getting higher and higher, getting closer and closer to Jupiter, and Jupiter's getting lower. So might like to watch that. The other thing to remember is we've got the equinox coming up, so that's when day and night will be the same length. So that's on Sunday the 23rd. After that, night times will become shorter and shorter, and day times get longer and longer.
All right.
Then excellent. Into summer.
Excellent. What's happening at the Stardo?
Well, we've got the second in the series of Stories in the Sky. We had for 3 months the winter Stories in the Sky. So now we're up to spring Stories in the Sky during September on Saturday and Sunday night at 6 p.m. These are narrated by Lucy Lawless and I was going to say Griff Rhys-Jones, but I know that's wrong. John Rhys-Davies.
Okay,
get the right celeb, sorry about that. So these are about the constellations and the stories in the sky that you can see over the 3 months of spring. And we'll have it, it'll be on more frequently in October, but in September it's Saturday and Sunday nights at 6 p.m. at Stardome.
Awesome. And was there anything else?
Well, we all have the school holiday program coming up in 2-3 weeks.
Little astronauts. Do you ever get kids coming up saying, I want to be an astronaut?
Not really, actually.
It's not popping off like it used to, is it?
No. And in fact,
I mean, have there been any kids that have become astronauts, you know?
From New Zealand?
Yeah.
No, there's been no Kiwi astronauts.
Okay, so it's easier to get in the NBA. Cool.
It is. I mean, even Australian astronauts, they became Americans first.
Right. Oh, yeah, okay. So I couldn't maybe even just a desk job at NASA would be a mint brag, you know?
Yeah.
I'm worried about the kids now. Fuck.
Well, what I find is because we teach, obviously, about space exploration, human space exploration, during the school programs during the day at Stardome.
Right.
But when you talk about the dangers of going to space or being in space, the difficulties of being in space, what you have to overcome, the training you have to do, and so on, when you then say, who wants to be an astronaut, hardly any hands go up at all. Because it actually is a hard thing to be an astronaut. It's not easy. And even if you're good at all those things, you probably won't get picked because you need to have a certain type of person. This is something that Chris Hadfield was asking. He said, look, because he spent a lot of time working with the Russians during the changeover after the shuttle stopped flying. And he was asked, so the Russian cosmonauts, are they different to you guys? I mean, what about the Chinese? And he said, no, we're all about the same because the same qualities and skills and personality types are needed.
Are required, yeah.
It doesn't matter which country you're from.
Well, maybe with this privatization of space travel, so to speak, I guess we'll have a whole raft of sort of bus driving-esque astronauts.
You mean like space cowboys?
Yeah, right on, there you go.
Yeah, probably if you have that, you'll also have, you know,
space police.
Deaths and tragedies.
yeah, that's true, actually. I didn't think you were going to say that before I started laughing.
So, yeah, there's been no Kiwi astronauts, but, you know, we're always encouraging children to get into the sciences, including space.
Shoot
and, of course, New Zealand, we have a space agency. We've got a space agency here before the Australians. They just formed a space agency in Australia in July this year.
Sweet.
We beat them to it.
Good as. Hey, look, I mean, there's always there's room for a first then, I guess is what we're saying, isn't it?
Well, we've beat them to sending satellites to orbit. I must say, though, that Rocket Lab's been a bit quiet in the last couple of months. They're meant to have launched their last one a month or so ago, and that didn't happen. They had a problem with a engine controller. And then there's been nothing. They just don't tell you anything.
Okay.
So we're waiting at the moment to see when their next launch window is going to be. But yeah, they actually have gone a bit quiet, so hope that doesn't indicate anything serious.
Yeah, yeah. All right, David, well, yeah, we employ everyone to get out and have a look at the old Stardome observatory and planetarium, of course.
Yeah, well, I'd mentioned very briefly the school holiday program, which, you know, the school holidays come up in 3 weeks. People do need to book for that.
Right, right.
And the theme is puzzling planets. So we're concentrating on those this time round. There's activities, there's rocket launching we do as a demonstration, and then the planetarium show is called The Wildest Weather in the Solar System.
Okay.
Nice one. All right. Hey, thank you very much, David. And we'll speak to you in a fortnight's time.
2 weeks' time. Look forward to it.
Pleasure, mate.
Bye.
Bye.
Control, we are docked. That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Ha, the unclear.